Welcome to this podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California, a nonprofit, nonpartisan forum open to the public. I'm Gloria Duffy, President and CEO of the club. To learn more about events or membership, join us online at commonwealthclub.org.
Good evening. Welcome to the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Dr. Carol Fleming. I happen to be a member of both the boards of the Commonwealth Club and the Hearing and Speech Center. So if one can wear two hats at the same time, that is what I am doing right now. I welcome all of you. I'm delighted to have you here, friends of the center, friends of the Commonwealth Club. I think you're going to have a wonderful program tonight. I want to call your attention to the little forms here. They're survey forms that I hope you'll take a minute to, it just takes a few seconds to circle some information here that helps us as we think about programming in the future, how we're doing, and if you would like to be on our emailing lists to find out about more programs like this, whether you are interested in the Commonwealth Club or in the Hearing and Speech Center. I'll be here with more forms if you did not get them. You're not going to have much of me tonight because I'm going to turn you right over to the person who is going to actually introduce the speaker. And this is Dr. Rupa Balachandran, who is Director of Audiology at the Hearing and Speech Center of Northern California. We are so pleased to do these programs in conjunction with the Hearing and Speech Center. And Rupa, I'll let you take it away. Please welcome Dr. Balachandran.
Thank you, Carol. Good evening and welcome to our mini-series celebrating May as the Better Hearing and Speech Month. Better Hearing and Speech Month has a long tradition. It was started in 1927 by the Council for Better Hearing and Speech Month, and the purpose is to promote awareness of hearing and hearing loss and to encourage individuals to get screened for hearing loss. In conjunction with Better Hearing and Speech Month, if you noticed the leaflets that were on your chair, you do have a voucher for a free hearing test at the Hearing and Speech Center. If you call and make your appointments by May 31st, we will honor those. So we encourage you to get your hearing checked. The I Can Hear You Now mini-series features three distinguished speakers, each of them leaders in their field, and we're very, very honored that they're going to be presenting here at the Commonwealth Club. We're very thankful to the Commonwealth Club in conjunction with the Hearing and Speech Center to put together this event, and I hope you enjoy it and appreciate it. I do have some colleagues here from the Hearing and Speech Center and UCSF. I call upon Malvina Levy, who is our director of the tinnitus program, Rebecca Bingay, who is from UCSF. She's a senior audiologist. We have Laura Clark, who is our chief of programs and heads up our assistive listening device center. And we will be at hand to answer questions, anything you might want to ask at the end of the program. I would just like to give you a flavor of what's to come. Thursday, May 29th, we have Dr. Rodney Perkins talking about experimental hearing aids, talking about the limitations of current hearing devices, and looking at what new technologies are available in the future. On Thursday, May 22nd, we have Dr. Lawrence Lustig from UCSF Medical Center, who is going to be talking not only about the success of cochlear implants, what is new with cochlear implants, bilateral implants, and new hybrid devices, and another experimental device for tinnitus as well. So that should be very interesting. And today we have Dr. Robert Sweeto, who is Director of Audiology at UCSF. We thought we would have somebody with a hot topic, but given the weather outside today, I think we have a cool speaker with a cool topic. Dr. Sweeter is director of audiology at UCSF. He's also a clinical professor in otolaryngology. He received his PhD in 1977, and he has written several book chapters and articles. And his most exciting work recently has been LACE, which is a listening and communication enhancement program. And the Hearing and Speech Center would like to share our claim to fame as saying Dr. Sweeter was director of audiology a few years back. So it's a pleasure and an honor to welcome him today. Thank you, Dr. Sweeter.
Well, I think I'm going to walk around here because if I stand behind the podium, you can't see me. This is amazing. Here I am over here. But this place is great. It has a stand, so now you all think that I'm like 6'6" tall or something like that. So that's great. Well, thank you very much for inviting me, Rupa, and I'm very pleased to be here. As Rupa mentioned, I was the director of audiology at the Hearing and Speech Center for many years. And so it's fun for me to come back and speak to all of you. There's a few more chairs here. It's pretty good when the speaker puts out the chairs and stuff like that. So here you go. All right. Well, I was looking out at the wall out there at all of the distinguished speakers that you've had, and I just happened to, and I know that one of the speakers that was here was this gentleman here, who's the governor of California, as you can see. And so that was really, I was very impressed that I was invited to speak at the same place as the governor. I'm going to move this back just a bit, can I? So at any rate, so I am going to talk today about a topic that's unfortunately near and dear to all of our hearts, and that's what happens to the brain and the ear as we get older. And as you'll see, it's not just the ear. You know, we think of a hearing loss as being related strictly to the ear, but it's absolutely not just the ear that falters when we, as we get older. And so I'm going to show you what happens to the brain, and I'm going to kind of show you why it is. I was trying to make the pictures a little bigger there, is all. So I'm going to show you why it is that even if you wear hearing aids and you try different kinds of things, that there's still a problem understanding speech, particularly in noisy environments. So we're going to look at lots of pictures of the ear, and I'm going to take you through a little bit about how the brain changes as we get older. And if you have questions, feel free to pop them out at me. I'm sorry I disconnected that already. And can everybody hear me all right? Okay. I know when I talk to my patients, what's that? I know. You have good hearing aids, yes. I know when I talk to my patients, they say, gee, I hear you so well when I'm with you, but then as soon as I walk outside, I don't hear quite as well. So if they're going on nice vacations, I invite myself along and things like that. So while we're getting that projector started, now that you've all seen that I actually own a suit, I will take this off. All right. Just waiting for that. Any questions so far here? Is this okay? Is this clear to everybody so far? All right. I'll try not to disconnect anything again. There we go. We're getting there. Yes?
Are you going to address amplification?
Well, you know, I'm going to talk just a little bit about amplification, but at the end of this session, if you have any questions, I'm more than happy to try to answer them. I know there's a lot of new, exciting things out in amplification that I'd be happy to talk to you about. But my job is supposed to be talking about what happens in the brain. But I'm more than happy to address it. Yes?
Why is it that the Better Hearing Center and Hearing Month, and we don't have captions or we don't have a loop?
Well, that's a very good question that I can't give the answer to, but actually that's something I'm surprised, actually. I would think that the Commonwealth Club would have the room looped, but I'm not sure. Okay, well, we're back in business again. So,
but there's a
loop here for you if you'd like to. It's plugged in directly to him.
There we go. So let's see, do I have a mic for this? No. Okay. All righty, so now we're ready to go, I think. So again, this is actually, you all know him, he was a speaker here, and he's actually my boss because I work for the University of California. And so he is technically my boss. He never interferes with anything that we do at UCSF, except for one thing. He likes us actually to dress, to look like him. So one of the things that I've had to do is I've had to come into work, you know, dressed really fancy like that. And you can see that, you know, that's when I used to have a, you know, much better build. That was yesterday when I had a better build. So, but you can see that they do provide us with these gigantic otoscopes, which are great, so we can really see in people's ears very well. So my job tonight is to talk to you about what happens, not just when you lose your hearing, but really what happens to your brain as you get older and how that affects your ability to understand speech, particularly in difficult listening environments. So you could see this, our little cartoon there that's making fun of the little guy, and I think the fun part of this is you could see right over there that there's his little smile that showed up over in his denture glass overnight. So that's kind of nice. Well, demographically, if you look at this slide, some amazing statistics. Just a century ago, less than 1 in 20 people lived to be 65 years of age. By 1980, 1 in 10. And look at this, by the year 2030, one out of every five people will be over age 65. So we're talking about a situation where we're seeing in the field of audiology more and more people coming in with hearing problems, not simply because the world is noisier, but because we're living a lot longer. We also know that hearing loss is going to increase sharply with age. So, for example, what happened here? This is one of those nights that everything is, all my electronics are going to, I just ran out of batteries. So, okay. So we know, but fortunately I'm tall enough to actually point to this. So we know that really with all ages, about 15% of people of all ages have some degree of hearing impairment. By the time you reach over 80, your likelihood of having a hearing loss is about 90%. So we're talking about a rapid rise, even though we know people of all ages can have hearing loss. I'm going to take you very briefly through the anatomy of the ear. My colleague Larry Lustig will be here next week. He's an ear surgeon. He knows the anatomy of the ear better than I do. But basically, just I suspect that all of you have seen pictures like this. Can you see these slides in the back? You see okay? All right. So what we're looking at here is the outer ear doesn't do much for us. It holds up our glasses. But one of the things it does, though, if you cup your ears like this, you're going to hear a lot better. I've always thought that Prince Charles must do fantastic because it collects the high-pitched sounds and bounces them right into your ears. When sound comes in, the sound waves go through your ear canal. They move your eardrum. They move because your eardrum is connected to these three smallest bones in your body. These three small bones move back and forth. And the third one pivots into the inner ear in a manner such that, and this little picture here is what the inner ear looks like. It looks like a snail. Part of it's for the balance mechanism. Part of it's for the hearing mechanism. Contained within here, and I'll show you on the next slide, is somewhere between 16 and 30,000 nerves in each inner ear. And these nerves leave the inner ear, and they come out of the ear kind of like a telephone cable, and they then course up to the brain. Well, if we take a closer picture, this is actually just showing how with every decade, typically it's not like when you hit your 50 and then 60, 70th birthday, all of a sudden your hearing drops more. But as you age, your ability to understand high-pitched sounds decreases. That's a cruel trick on us because the high-pitched sounds are the most important sounds in the English language. How many of you have seen Wheel of Fortune, a TV show, Wheel of Fortune? Okay, about half of you. If you ever saw Vanna White walk across the stage and she turns over and lets you see all the consonant sounds, you can understand what the phrase is. But if you only hear the vowel sounds, you don't understand. You can't pick out what the word is because the vowel sounds are low frequencies. Consonant sounds are high frequencies. So when you don't hear the consonants, you have trouble understanding the word. And fortunately, I mean, the vowels carry the loudness. So when I talk to you, if I cover up my mouth, you could still hear me talking here, but it's hard to understand what I'm saying. I just said you could still hear me talking, but it's hard to understand what I'm saying. Because the vowels, that's why so many people say, I can hear you, I can't understand you, because they don't hear the high pitches, the high frequencies. That's one reason. We'll get to the other big reason later. This is what, if you take an electron microscope, this is what the inner ear, those little nerves, these 16,000 or to 30,000 nerves in the inner ear look like. This would be in what we call a normal organ of Corti, or normal inner ear. This is an abnormal inner ear. And you could see how many of these cells are missing. Here's a better picture of that right here. That's normal. These are called hair cells, by the way, in our terms, not because they're hairs, but because they look like hairs underneath the microscope. So these are the hair cells. This is what we would normally expect. We have rows of what we call outer hair cells, which kind of serve like muscles to allow you to hear very soft sounds. And then we have rows of inner hair cells that shoot the message from the ear up to the brain. If you lose the outer hair cells, which is typically what happens as we get older or as we're exposed to noise, then what happens is you can't understand soft sounds. The funny thing, however, is that in many cases, these inner hair cells, way up here, right there, they're intact. So this is why so many people with hearing loss say, they could hear, you know, when you start to talk real loud, you go, hey, I hear you okay, don't shout. Because the inner hair cells are intact. The outer hair cells, we need them to hear soft sounds. So people with hearing loss typically have hearing loss for soft sounds, but not for loud sounds. And that's why hearing aids have had to really undergo some dramatic changes over the years. Otherwise, in the old days, hearing aids would amplify soft sounds by the same amount as they'd amplify loud sounds. So if I talked quietly, you might be able to hear me. But if I talked loud, your hair, if you still had hair, would stand up and, you know, you'd be going, that's way, way too loud. So now hearing aids are much different. Well, this is a little cartoon to show you what happens. This is a picture of a very magnified picture of a hair cell. This is one of these little hair cells. And these hair cells react as sound comes in. So if my computer will play this, watch what happens here. Watch this hair cell.
One, two, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're going to rock around 10 o'clock tonight. But it's bad.
That's what happens. That's literally what goes on in your ear. You could see that hair cell. Well, you can't see that hair cell, but that hair cell is actually changing. It's shortening. As it shortens, it shoots out this electrical message up to the brain. Well, so I've been talking about the ear up to now, and again, the ear is very vulnerable to changes as you get older. But that's not the real problem. The real problem takes place in the brain. We don't hear in our ear. Our ear is just like a receptacle that brings the sound up to our brain. We hear in our brain. If you look at this little cartoon, here again is our inner ear, that little snail-like thing. And now watch what happens. The signal comes into the inner ear, and watch as it courses all the way up the brain, right through like this, right up to what's called the auditory cortex. Watch this on the screen. Whoops. Let's see if I can do that again. There we go. So the signal comes into the ear. Oops, and I keep screwing that up. And it, as you can see, it just courses all the way through the brain. Some of the signals go to the other side of the brain. You can see on this side. So here's one ear. The electrical nerves fire in the ear, and they send up some of the signal right up to the same side of the brain. So if I'm listening to you in my right ear, some of the signal goes to this side of my brain. Most of the signal crosses over to the other side of my brain, and I hear it over here. Along the way, it stops at several places. Nerves only run for a short distance, then they reach the end, and there's a chemical that's released that jumps to the next nerve, goes up, 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 until it reaches the brain. Much more complicated than we think. It's a lot more complicated than the eye. People say, well, I put glasses on, I could see great. How come when I put hearing aids on, I can't hear great? And it's because the ear is much more complicated than the eye. The eye works mechanically. The ear works electrically. But there's more. As you lose your hearing, there are nerves in your ear. The ear works kind of like a piano. You have like high pitches at one end, low pitches at the other end. And in the ear itself, if I was able to take that snail-like structure and roll it out flat, I would have a piano keyboard, whereas one end would, all the nerves on one end will process low pitch vowel sounds. All the nerves on the other end will process high pitch consonant sounds. Okay? But here is what happens. The brain always wants something to do. So you have nerves in your ear, and you have nerves in your brain. You know, when I said there was like 30,000 nerves in an ear, some of you went, wow, that's a lot of nerves. There are billions of nerves in your brain. In fact, I read recently that someone was saying that the number of nerves in every person, we'll pick you, you look like a smart man, in your brain there are as many nerves as there are leaves in the Amazon jungle. Okay? So if you have any questions, ask this gentleman. He knows the answers. So that's right, about three nerves. That's right. So at any rate, here's what happens in the ear. This is nerves that process low-pitch sounds, mid-frequency sounds, and high-pitch sounds. And then in the brain, there are nerves that are associated with those nerves in your ear. Certain nerves are responsible for high-pitch sounds, low-pitch sounds, medium-pitch sounds. And so here's what happens. When you send in a normal ear, you send in a low pitch sound, there's a certain set of nerves in your brain that will respond. You send in different sounds, different nerves will respond. But if you lose your high pitch hearing, like so many people do, then what happens is this. These nerves in the brain, they have nothing to do because they're not getting the high pitches. They want to have something to do. It's just like when you have a stroke, you know, your left side of your brain controls language. But if you have a stroke, you lose your language, but then amazingly, the right side of your brain begins to take over and allows you to regain some language capability. Well, similarly, in the brain with hearing, if these nerves in your brain that normally receive high-pitched sounds are not getting stimulated, they will begin to respond to mid-pitched sounds. So they change their function. And then, and this, by the way, is called neural plasticity. But then, all of a sudden, if you get yourself a hearing aid, then what's going to happen is all of a sudden you've got these sounds going back up to the brain. But now the question is, are these nerves going to regain their function? They do to some extent, but not completely. They just don't know exactly what to do. So some people say, well, you know, that's one of the reasons we encourage people when they lose their hearing to try to get amplification or whatever as soon as possible so that their brain does not completely shift its function into listening to different sounds. Well, there's still more to this story. I'm almost hesitant to say that because I think there's about half women and half men in the audience. But this is brain weight. And this is the brain weight of females. This is the brain weight of males. Males' brains weigh more. That doesn't mean they're smarter. It means that they have some larger neurons and perhaps more neurons, but you know, as every woman in the room could say that, you know, this size doesn't matter or something like that, I guess. But at any rate, what you could see is over time, now when you're young, the brain weight and the number of neurons increases. It reaches a point where between your 20s and 40s, where you're at your maximum brain weight. As you continue to get older, the brain weight starts to go down. The reason it starts to go down is that, number one, some of these billions of nerves, they've not been functioning, so they lose their capabilities and they die out. But you can see actually what happens. This is on a, these are the nerve endings on a 14-year-old. This is a 73-year-old, an 81-year-old, and believe it or not, a 106-year-old person. And you can see how much more complex the nerve endings are in the young person than in the old person. Well, even though we put hearing aids on people of all ages, the fact of the matter is the majority of people who have hearing loss and wear hearing aids fall in the older age group. I used to think that 60 and up was the older age group until I turned 60. And now I think the older age group is like 90. But here's what happens when we get older. Several things inevitably will happen to our brain. The first thing is that we lose some of our speed of processing. So, in other words, speech comes by very rapidly. We speak at a rate of 120 to 180 words a minute. That's how fast we speak. Oh, thank you. We speak 120 to 180 words a minute. And many of my patients come in and they say to me, if only people would speak slower, I would be fine. They're right. More important than having your grandkids and your kids, if you have a hearing loss, talk louder to you is to have them talk slower to you, because then your brain has more time to compensate for what it is you're not hearing quite right. So speed of processing is very, very important. Another thing that's very, and I'm going to actually do a test on all of us on speed of processing in a minute. Another thing that's important is working memory. Working memory means that you're using your knowledge that you've learned before and that you've learned over a long term. You're using your short-term memory about what you just heard, and you're using your worldly knowledge to fill in what is likely to be about to be said. And you can fill in ahead of time what's about to be said. I mean, if I say that, you know, I'm really hungry, so I'm going to go out to eat at a restaurant. You know, I mean, I didn't say the word, but you knew what was coming. So working memory is important, but as we get older, our working memory declines, and I'll show you how. The third thing that declines is our what we call our executive control, which is the ability to make an immediate distinction about what we want to attend to versus what we don't want to attend to. So older people have much more trouble in noise than younger people. And I'll show you a slide in a few minutes that shows that even if the older person has perfectly normal hearing, if you put both of them in the same acoustic environment where there is noise, the older person will have much more trouble than the younger person. And it's because the older person cannot filter out the noise as well as the younger person because of changes in these nerves. So we're going to do a test here just to see how well all of us do, just to show you, because some of you in here are very young, some of you are older. And so this is a test that gerontologists often use. This is audience participation. All of you have to say this out loud, and that way your neighbors can laugh at you. So here's what we're going to do. So you see the instructions. Say the colors of the dots as quickly as you can from left to right. You ready? Now you have to do this fast. Here we go. Beautiful. Red, blue, green, yellow. All of you have great color vision. You all did that very, very fast. Except for you, you've got sunglasses on. You had a little. I saw you moving those sunglasses. That was a little tough. Okay, so red, blue, green, yellow. You did that great. Let's do it again. Now, the instructions are a little different. Say the colors in which the words are printed as quickly as you can. So now you're saying the colors in which the words are printed. Ready? Here we go. Okay. That was pretty good. You all are, you know, reason you come to the Commonwealth Club, I see. You all did really well on that. You slowed down, though, a little bit. Because even though I didn't say read the words, you all know how to read. And so subconsciously, not only were you looking at the colors, but you were reading the words. So you slowed down a little. Well, watch this one. Here's one more test. Now, as you see, these are exactly the same instructions. You ready? Same instructions. Here we go. Whoa! Little bit of a problem there, huh? Little bit of a problem. Now, you know, it's funny. I was giving a talk in Brazil, and I showed this, and everybody just blasted right through it. They did it really fast. And I realized it's because they didn't know, they just read the colors. They didn't know the words. So I thought, wow, these people are really sharp. But at any rate, so you see what happened is I created a mismatch here. So your brain was saying, well, wait, that should be blue, that should be yellow, that should be red, that should be green, but because you read the words, it slowed you down. So it slowed down your speed of the older you, this is a test that is used on a normed basis. The older we are, the slower we get at this. So I already mentioned about the short-term memory, but again, with memory, we have a restriction. Our brains are only so big. We can only hold so much into our brains. And if we start to exceed the capacity of our brain, we're going to have to draw on some other resource. So, and this is, goes with any kind of mental function. The other thing that happens is if you look at scans of a brain, a young person's brain will have activity that is very specific to a certain part of the brain. In the older person, again, because some of your resources have decreased, the activity in the brain is more distributed over the whole brain because you need to draw on other parts. But again, as you draw on other parts, it's going to, eventually it costs you. You know, there's something that there's a psychologist in Berkeley that I was talking with who was saying to me, look, he said, if you go up let's say you're going to a store and you want to get up to the 10th floor. You can either take the stairs or you could take the elevator. When you get up to the 10th floor, you have to do a little dance. Well, you're going to get up to the 10th floor whether you walk up there or whether you take the elevator, but you're going to have a lot more energy when you get to the 10th floor after you took the elevator than if you walked. And this is one of the problems that we have with hearing loss. When you have hearing loss, you have to draw on additional resources from the brain, and it fatigues you. At the end of the day, hearing loss, it's one of the things, we never think about hearing loss as being something that fatigues a person, but it absolutely does. So the good news is, as you get older, there are certain parts of your memory that are retained. Other parts are lost. As you get older, you have better experience, personal history, world knowledge than the young person. The nice news is we tend to retain that kind of memory as we get older. But as I mentioned earlier, the processing is slowed, and because your ability to use this memory and solve problems takes more time. You can't afford to take time when you're listening because speech is going by so fast. If you miss something and you start thinking, what was that I just missed? Now you're missing what's happening right now. So it creates a bit of a problem. So, you know, you can ask the question, and I often have, why do patients come to see us in an audiology clinic? And, I got this slide out of order, actually. I'll skip to this. This slide is simply, it's technical, but what it's again saying is that as you get older, regardless of your hearing loss, you need a quieter, less reverberant, a better acoustic atmosphere to hear the same or to understand the same as you did when you were younger, regardless of your hearing loss. Because again, it draws more on your brain. This is just some perspectives of, as you can see, an older person. When you're hard of hearing, you struggle to hear. When you struggle to hear, you get tired. When you get tired, you get frustrated. When you get frustrated, you get bored. And when you get bored, you quit. And this is what we see so frequently with so many people. As they have difficulty hearing, they say, I'm not going to the restaurants. I'm not going to the theater. I'm not going to these environments because it's frustrating for me. It's difficult for me. Well, the older person has problems that are different than the younger person. The older person with some degree of hearing loss doesn't have a lot of trouble listening to speech in quiet. They don't have a lot of trouble listening to one person talking. Don't have a lot of trouble when the person talking is a familiar voice or face, when it's a familiar topic or a situation, or if it's a simple task in which you can focus your attention just on that one speaker. A lot of people, for example, hear better on the phone than they do when they're actually, you know, sitting in certainly in a restaurant or something like that where there's all this distraction. But when you get into these non-ideal listening situations where there's noise, multiple talkers, strangers, different topics, complex tasks, and a fast pace, that's when the older person really runs into major trouble because their resources are too stretched. There's been lots of research that shows that if you simply look at the degree of hearing loss, we can predict exactly how a person will do. If we look at, you know, if you've had a hearing test and you've had your audiogram measured, we can look at that test and we could say, by just looking at this, this is how you're going to do in a quiet situation. But the moment you get into a noisy situation, all bets are off. Two people with identical hearing losses function completely different in difficult situations. And it's one of the reasons when you go to your audiologist, you want to tell them when they test your hearing and they test your, you know, and they say the word house, say the word car, say the word boat. You want to then say, could you also test me in a noisy environment? Because that's when we're really going to learn how much trouble you would be expected to have in a noisy, in the real world. And also with hearing aids. That's how we will really know, is by testing you in a noisy environment. And again, the reason is partly because of your ear, because your ear works like a filter, just like a radio. You know, if you're driving over here to the Commonwealth Club and you put on 102.1 on your FM dial, you don't hear 102.3 or 101.9. You just hear 102.1. But if somebody goes outside and breaks your antenna, which is the equivalent of damaging your hair cells in your inner ear, then you lose the filtering. And all of a sudden, instead of just hearing 102.1, you get all this bleed over from the other stations, and it doesn't sound very good. So it's very much the same. So here's what happens. So as you get older, it is creating not only this SNR stands for signal-to-noise ratio, the difference between the signal and the noise. The more adverse the listening environment you're in, what it does is it creates more of a strain on these cognitive brain resources that are already being taxed simply because you're going through a normal aging process. So the hearing loss combines with the brain restrictions, I don't want to call them restrictions, but the slowdowns in the brain, and it makes you have to expend more effort listening than you did 30 years ago. Even if your hearing's the same as it was 30 years ago, you are expending more effort listening than you were then. So when we listen to speech, there's two things that happen. We get the sound coming up from our ear, and so that kind of, we call that bottom-up processing. We listen to the little different pitches and different sounds in the ear, the different sounds coming through the ear, but we also use what we call top-down processing, meaning we use our brain to decipher what's important and what's not important. And if either one of these are hampered, then the other one will become hampered. So an important distinction for everyone to make is that listening is not the same thing as hearing. All of you have, all of you know people who have normal hearing, perhaps spouses or loved ones, who are lousy listeners, right? Because listening requires a different set of skills than hearing. Hearing is simply picking up sounds, getting access to the acoustic signals. But listening requires intention and attention. So it's a different skill. Even if you hear, you might not be a good listener. Even if you are a good listener, let's say, you know, if I go to listen to somebody, I'll bet you've all had this experience. If you watch the BBC on television, it's hard to understand that because we're not accustomed to that tempo and that accent. Well, you're listening okay, but your comprehension gets messed up because their accents are on different syllables. I could speak a little bit of Spanish, but if somebody speaks Spanish to me, it sounds like they've said one word, just one really long word, because it just all the words run together. And if you have a hearing loss, it makes it even more difficult because now not only are the words going to run together, but I'm going to be missing some of the sounds. It's one of the reasons why typically when you hear a sentence, you miss the end of the sentence. You know, if you ever notice that, you'll miss the end of the sentence. And it's because people tend to tail off at the end of their sentences. Not in Canada, I've noticed. Canada, they end every sentence. Is anybody Canadian in here before I answer? Oh, several Canadians. So, okay. So, but Canadians seem to, it's a nice language. You end every sentence, sounds like it's a question. You know, so I think Canadians who lose their hearing are better off than Americans who lose their hearing because you don't drop the end of the words. Hey, you don't drop the end of the words, eh? So at any rate, so the stress that happens while you're trying to process the sound because of your hearing loss pulls away from your mental processes and it makes it much more difficult for you. So if you put this whole picture together, what's going to happen is you've got stuff going on in your peripheral system, that's your ear. The signal from the peripheral system, if there's any hearing loss, those changes in your hearing loss literally change your brain. So even a young person, when they're not getting sound coming in, their brain begins to change because the nerves that are going to fire a lot because they're getting stimulated, they're active. The nerves that are not firing because you're not hearing certain sounds, they say, hey, you know, I need some action here, so I'm going to fire to different sounds. So your damage to the ear changes the way your brain functions. And then on top of it, as you age, you get changes in your brain anyway that are inevitable. And so those two things tie together. This is kind of a depressing talk as I'm thinking about it now, isn't it? But there's some ways around this. So these two things combine, create some problems, and it makes it more difficult for you. If as an audiologist, we look at a person's hearing loss and sometimes we go, I don't understand why these people are having so much trouble. But it's very explainable if you realize that it's not all about the ear. That hearing test, that basic hearing test, raise your hand when you hear the beep, that measures your ear. It doesn't measure your brain. That's why we need to do testing in noisier, more difficult environments. I mentioned earlier that the older person, their brain, the activity is distributed throughout the brain, much more so than a young person where certain parts of the brain can really focus. So the older person really needs to take advantage of not only their hearing, but their vision. Another cruel trick, as we get older, sometimes our vision goes. We need to utilize all kinds of content about what we're hearing. If you're out in an environment and you're in a restaurant and you don't understand what the rest of the group is talking about, subtly nudge your neighbor and just, if you could get the idea, the context of what's being discussed, you'll do a lot better. We got to coordinate all these different multiple sources of information, vision, hearing, all of these things, in order to arrive at the best understanding. That's the idea. This has a lot of consequences on what we do with hearing aids. There are certain hearing aids that operate very rapidly. So as loudness changes, the hearing aid changes very quickly. But as we get older, that doesn't work as well. So you're better off with a hearing aid that changes with loudness, because you don't want loud sounds to be too loud or soft sounds to be too soft. These changes have to take place more gradually. Now, when I say more gradually, I'm not talking about, 5 minutes from now. I'm talking about the difference in milliseconds, thousandths of a second. But that's a difference electronically, and that's a difference in the brain that we have to deal with. There's another thing we have to deal with, and that is that, typically speaking, if we see somebody who has similar hearing in both ears, you're always going to hear, almost always, going to hear the audiologist say, well, if you're going to try hearing aids, you try two, not one, because you got two ears, and they're both functioning somewhat equally. In older people, sometimes that logic doesn't work because, again, of the breakdown in the nerve pathways in the brain. So there are some people who have similar hearing in both ears, and yet you put two hearing aids on and you go, I'll tell you the truth, I hear better with just one hearing aid. And for years, audiologists said, you just don't want to buy two hearing aids or be seen with two hearing aids or something like that. It's not true. There are some people whose brains create interference from one side to the other side. And so for those people, we need to do testing. So if you go back to your audiologist and you say, I'm telling you, I hear better with one hearing aid than the other, your audiologist needs to test to see if your two ears are working together to augment or improve the signal, or are they working apart so that they interfere with each other. Something important. So there's a lot of potential impediments to doing well listening, if you will. Some of these are that as we get older, there's just this global cognitive decline that we just all face. It's inevitable, though it happens faster in some and slower in others. There's also the fact that we tend to adapt really bad strategies for listening. My in-laws are in town right now. I actually told them to come and hear me speak tonight, and they weren't listening to me, so they forgot to come, I think. But my father-in-law absolutely sits there, and he just, and what his maladaptive strategy is he talks the whole time so that you don't have a chance to talk, so that he doesn't have a chance to not hear you. So that's a maladaptive strategy. Other maladaptive strategies that we've all done is we bluff. Somebody says something to us and we go, yeah, that's right. And we smile and, we don't know. They might be saying to you, boy, you look really horrible today. And you're going, yeah, that's great, because you're bluffing. So that's a bad strategy. Just asking somebody to repeat exactly what they said, that's a bad strategy. Because if you missed it the first time because of your hearing, chances are you're going to miss it the second time because of your hearing. So rather than asking for a repeat, you might say, here's what I understood you just said. Could you rephrase that? Or what was the last part of what you said? Rather than having them repeat everything. Our brain changes. This is a big one. We lose confidence. One of the tests that we've just developed at UCSF assesses how confident is a person about what they're hearing. An interesting study that was done recently looks at a comparison between how you think you heard or how much you think you understood versus how much you really understood. I have patients come in all the time that say to me, I didn't understand a word that was said in the restaurant I went to last night. Now, for one thing, their spouse typically will say, I didn't understand much either because it was noisy. But if I said to them, let's talk about what was said in that restaurant last night, the actual amount that was comprehended is very considerable. But we tend to lose confidence to think that we understood less than we actually received. English is redundant. It's very redundant. If you miss something, don't worry about it. Wait till the next sentence, and it's likely that your brain will fill in the gaps of what you just missed. This is another great statement that was made by one of our fellow scientists. Although it's true that detection of a sound does not ensure its recognition, it's even more true that if you don't detect it, the probability of identifying it is diminished. Well, that makes sense. That makes all the sense in the world. But here's the thing. There's all kinds of situations in which I can present. I did it before with the restaurant. I can say something to you, and you can miss a significant section of what I said. Your brain will fill in the rest. It's the same with, I have a slide, I didn't put it in this presentation, but I have a slide of a Dalmatian in a forest of all this snow. So you look at it at first, and you can't see exactly what's going on. But if I point out to you that, look at that, there's a Dalmatian in that picture, all of a sudden it just pops right out at you, if you've got that idea. So the brain really fills in a lot, even as we get older. So the problem with hearing aids, though, is that hearing aids don't resolve a lot of the problems that we face, particularly the unrealistic expectations that people have about hearing aids. That is partially the fault of the marketing experts out there, the people who say, digital hearing aids, you're going to hear like you're listening to a CD or a digital. That's not true. I mean, digital sound is just how it's processed. The actual sound that comes out isn't digital. It's what we call analog. Digital means that everything is converted electronically to numbers. So unless you are talking to somebody and that person is saying to you 01110000011100100, you're not hearing digitally, you're hearing normally. So it's not the digital hearing aids that can do so much good. The problem is that we have expectations about hearing. If you have expectations about how you're going to communicate, because that's the key, not hearing, not listening, the key is communication. And that requires use of proper strategies and integrating all these sensory functions that have declined somewhat. If, on the other hand, you assume that the hearing aids that you get are going to do everything for you, you're going to fail because the hearing aids can't restore listening. They restore hearing. They restore audibility of sounds. They do not restore your communication skills. So you can't have a product orientation, because if you do, you're just going to assume that if you're not doing well, that these hearing aids stink or this audiologist is lousy. That's not correct. You've got to have goals. Your audiologist has to help you set up a rehabilitation program that is geared around communication, because that's what takes place in the brain. Hearing takes place in the ear. In the past 45 minutes, we've talked about it's not just the ear. It's the brain as well. So that's what the whole program has got to be geared around, rehabilitation. This is a great statement I picked up recently. If you don't, blessed is he who expects nothing, for he will not be disappointed. I love that. So the idea is, if you're going to get hearing aids, your expectations about what the hearing aids will do have got to be realistic. But beyond that, you've got to demand some kind of program that's going to help you learn to communicate. Now, some of this will happen with something they give you in writing. Some of it will happen with some rehabilitation, some classes you go to, certainly helping your hearing. We've got a bunch of the Hearing Speech Center has all these devices in the back we call assistive listening devices, because speech dissipates, sound dissipates over distance. If I, you know, you can hear me in the back right now the same as you're hearing me in the front, because I got a microphone. Okay, so in other words, assistive listening devices help carry sound over distance. So that's important. Well, the biggest mistake I think we make is that we make hearing aids the focus of our rehabilitative attention, and that shouldn't be. The focus of the attention needs to be enhancing communication. So one of the things that we're doing over at UCSF right now is we're telling people, you know what, if you call and you say, I'd like to come in to get some new hearing aids, or I'd like to come in for a hearing aid evaluation, we're now starting to say, no, what we would like you to come in for is a communication needs assessment. Let's figure out what your communication needs are. Are you not hearing well because your spouse talks from the other room all the time? Are you not hearing, that happens. Are you not hearing well because your spouse, unbeknownst to you, has a throat problem and is very quiet or something like that? Let's find out what the problems are here. Chances are hearing aids will be needed. But there's also a chance that assistive listening devices will be needed, or that some kind of a home auditory training program or group classes will be needed. Everything to augment one's communication. So instead of simply assessing somebody, and I'm going to skip through this stuff because it's boring, but instead of simply assessing somebody's hearing, we need to set up a program that provides education and counseling, communication strategies, individualized auditory training, hearing aids and or assistive listening devices, and possibly some kind of group therapy lessons. So one of the programs that I have done, and you want me to end? Okay, I'll end in about 2 minutes then. So one of the programs we've done is a program called LACE, which you can talk to your audiologist about, which is a computerized home program that actually is coming out on DVD next month, in case you don't have a computer, that really works at helping you learn to listen in these different areas. So it's not about hearing aids. Hearing aids are about hearing. This kind of a program is about listening. That's what the program looks like on the computer. One other thing I want to bring up before I close. We're really lucky in San Francisco. Years ago, I was able to talk the food critic of the San Francisco Chronicle. Have you ever looked at, you know, if you look on the Sunday paper and you see about movies, and if it's a really good movie, the guy's clapping, and if it's a terrible movie, he's sleeping and stuff like that. I said to them, you know, our hearing impaired patients would really like it if you would show in restaurants how noisy the restaurant is. Well, it turns out that people who are not hearing impaired really like it. Young people really like it. If you're a girl going to go out on a date with some really boring, handsome guy, say, I don't know, Keanu Reeves or something. I don't know if he's boring, but let's say he's a good-looking guy. He's kind of boring. What would be nice is to go to the restaurant that has the bomb, that's really noisy, so you could just look at this handsome guy and not have to listen to him. So look in the paper, and you know, when you go to a restaurant, look for places that are quieter. I went out yesterday with another reporter from the Chronicle, and we're now visiting malls, shopping malls. If you ever go into some of these stores where teenage girls shop, Abercrombie and Finch, or Fitch, or whatever it is, you walk in there, the noise level in there is unbelievable. And they said, why do you think that is? And I said, I think it is because I think that then the mother of the teenage girl says, buy something and let's get the heck out of here. You know, let's get out of here as fast as we can. So that's, you know, psychological. At any rate, so deny your age, but don't deny your options. You got a lot of options with hearing aids, assistive listening devices, therapies, and so on. If any of you have computers and you want copies of these slides, that's my email address, and you could get this from the Hearing and Speech Center, or you can contact me. Thank you very much for listening, and if you have any questions, I'm happy to entertain them.
Thank you so much, Robert. We have a few minutes for questions.
I have a problem which I'm sure is shared by others, and that is word recognition. I mean, it's been shown by tests, and I can hear, forget about the hearing aids, I mean, I can hear what's said, but I don't always get the comprehension, and sometimes my response is absolutely sounds stupid.
Well, and again, and that is very, very common. And that's what I'm talking about when I say that the hearing loss and your ability to understand speech are not always the same thing. So what do you have to do in that situation? You have to integrate. You have to control the communication situation. You have to say to the people, I'm going to need you to talk slower. I'm going to need you to talk a little bit more to my right side if I hear better in my right side. I have to be in a situation where I can easily see you and we're not in a dark environment. I have to go into restaurants that are quiet. One of the things I told this reporter the other day is call a restaurant during, if you're going to call and you want to know how noisy the restaurant is, call them during the dinner hour. And then you'll hear, even over the phone, you'll hear how noisy it is in the background, and you may say, forget it. So you have to take control of that situation because the hearing aids alone are not going to give you back that problem. Yes, sir.
You're talking about hearing loss in the high frequencies and also how that changes with age. I'd like to talk for a minute about low frequency sounds, the mechanism, and how that changes with age. If you consider back in 1925 in the silent movies when they had large theaters, they always had an organ to play to get into the input, and that would play, comedy would be fast and so on. But for the horror movies, they always played a special 7 hertz organ pipe, so, and everybody felt scared regardless of what their age was. And also in the Arctic, the explorers claim they can hear, and the natives claim they can hear aurora in the 10 hertz range or something. And I can't visualize from those little cells and things, we got a sound wave that's 30 meters long, you know, very long sound wave.
Yeah, the answer is typically we lose our high frequencies first. You're going to lose your hearing approximately a half octave to an octave higher than than the loudest signal that you're being bombarded with. So if you're bombarded with a low-pitched signal, theoretically you could lose your hearing in the low pitches, though typically what's going to happen is that the way the ear functions is the high-frequency end is always, even if it's a low-frequency sound, the high-frequency end is getting blasted. So the high frequencies typically go first. There are certain disease processes that affect the low frequencies first, but not aging.
So how can you hear a 10 hertz signal?
We can hear, typically the typical human being hears from 20 hertz up to 20,000 hertz when you're young. So a 10 hertz signal, you're probably feeling rather than hearing. And that's the idea in a theater. If you go to see a movie and the movie's about earthquakes, they're going to use that low frequency sound and they're going to just rumble it and your chair will shake. And so that's the whole idea there. Your whole body, yeah, sure, you'll feel it. Yes, sir.
Oh, when you were talking about perhaps using just one hearing instead of two... I've got it. You didn't say anything about stereo hearing of itself, and could you relate to that at all, the function of the two ears in stereo?
Sure. Hearing aids are notoriously lousy for stereo hearing, and here's why. You hear through microphones. Now, some of the brand new hearing aids are starting to try to correct for the fact that when you hear a sound coming through a microphone, you lose the cues that the brain uses for stereophonic hearing. Those cues are the time of arrival at your two ears, the phase of the signal. The hearing aid doesn't do that. The hearing aid, it's a microphone. So it picks up the signal, and it doesn't have the proper relationship. So a person with hearing aids says, everything sounds like it's right here, rather than like it's out there. And it really is a different, unpleasant, or I shouldn't say unpleasant, but not as pleasant experience as you would get with stereophonic hearing. So there's a lot of research going on in that area, but I will say to you that a lot of it has to do with the placement of where the microphone is. Our ear, you know, when you get a hearing aid, the microphone is either out here, outside of your ear canal, or up here. That's not where our eardrums are. Our eardrums are way inside. We have a resonance in our ear canal that we really need. And where we place hearing aids typically does not take advantage of that resonance. There's a brand new hearing aid out now that's actually implanted way down in the ear that does take advantage of that resonance. but it has its own limitations as well.
And I've never heard an audiologist discuss the effect of distortion of your own voice because of resonance in the skull.
So the question is, the question is, how come audiologists don't discuss how your own voice sounds terrible when you put hearing aids on? Well, it's not the hearing aids that make your own voice sound terrible. Here's what it is. Everybody take one finger and stick it in your ear right now and hum. Go ahead, do this. Where do you hear it?
Buzzing.
Well, yeah, buzzing, but where do you hear the humming? You hear it in the ear you're plugging, right? Okay. That's because normally when we speak, we set up a vibration in our ear canals, and that vibration escapes out into midair. But when we stick a hearing aid in there, we trap that vibration. So it makes your own voice sound like it echoes or like you're in a barrel. It's one of the reasons why most hearing aids now are moving toward leaving your ear wide open. If your ear is wide open, you do not get that occlusion sensation.
Not as much,
but no, theoretically, if your ear is wide open, you should not get it at all. I'm sorry?
Where do you put the device?
Well, the device still sends the signal into the ear, but your ear canal is left open. Years ago, you couldn't do that because if you did it, your hearing aid would whistle. Well, some of the new hearing aids now have a circuit that will, as soon as it picks up whistling, it will change the signal. It'll reverse the phase so it stops the whistling or at least minimizes the whistling. So there's a lot of that. I'd say in 5 years from now, you're not going to see any hearing aids that plug up the ear. That's my opinion.
Say that again.
I'd say 5 years from now, you're not going to see hearing aids that completely block the ear. Well, you put it in the ear. I mean, the sound's got to go into your ear, but you're just that. But the sound is going from an amplifier.
Excuse me, sir?
Well, it's going through a tubing into your ear, but it doesn't block your ear. The tubing only partially fills your ear.
Excuse me, sir.
Hang on. Please use the microphone.
Excuse me, sir. We actually have those hearing aids on display at the back, so you can take a look at it
end. Yeah, there you go.
And we have the next question from the lady over there. Hold on. Excuse me, sir. She's been waiting.
Hello. My question is, for an average person and for a person with a very high IQ, I wonder how much or how many percent can they retain from hearing this, like this program? How much?
The question was, that's a great question. The question was, if a person has a high IQ, how much do you retain from hearing a program like I've just presented? 50% if you have a very high IQ. 50%.
For what,
like,
about
me,
the average?
I only understood about 10% of what I've talked about.
So when you say 10%, there has to be a communication breakdown.
Oh, that's right. It's a communication breakdown. But again, you hear, when you go into the doctor, we hear, you know, there's actually been a study that says you retain 50% of what was said to you, but how much of it do you correctly get? 25%. So it really, you know, that's why when you get instruction, the best instruction is repeated instruction. It's over and over and over, and it kind of drills it in. Yes, sir.
In terms of auditory perception, what do dogs have that we don't have?
I don't know if you heard the question. In terms of auditory perception, what do dogs have that we don't have? Dogs have, number one, dogs have an additional turn in their inner ear. We have 2 3/4 turns. Isn't that right? Where's Rupa? She's a physiologist.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Isn't that right? 2 3/4 turns. And if I remember from a long time ago, dogs have almost 4 turns in their cochlea, so they could hear high frequencies better. But there's something else. Dogs have muscles in their outer ear that allow them to focus. You know, so again, that's why I was making a joke about Prince Charles or, you know, Ross Perot, but it really is helpful if you can bounce the high frequencies into your ears. A dog can move their ears to better localize where the sound is. Yeah.
People who get hypothermic will often lose their ability to hear, and then it comes back. Can you talk about that a little bit?
The question is, people who get hypothermic will lose their hearing and then it will come back. Can I talk about it? Not intelligently. I can make something up. But no, I don't know. I mean, I don't actually. Your next speaker next week, Larry Lustig, ask him the question. And what you could raise your hand and you could say, that idiot, Dr. Sweeto, I asked him a question. He didn't know the answer. Can you answer it? And Larry will be able to answer that one. Sorry, I don't know. I really don't know the answer to that.
If we're bringing our tired old brains and ears in for testing, should we do it in the morning when we're fresh and highly caffeinated, or at the end of the day when we're tired and frustrated and worn out? Which is better for you to get a good evaluation on it?
Well, it's a great question. The question was, if we evaluate your hearing, would you do better in the morning when you're awake than you would at the end of the day? Well, one thing I'll say is hearing tests are amazingly boring. I've been doing this for 35 years. I've had many patients fall asleep while I'm doing the hearing tests. But in terms of actual hearing, as long as you're paying attention, your hearing shouldn't drop down. But your ability, your word recognition, your understanding of speech in difficult situations, if you're more fatigued, you're going to do poorer.
You mentioned earlier that you should ask for your testing to be done in a noisy environment. Are you saying that's the way it is done now, or you should ask for that? But, it, you know, why is this not the way it's done if this is the way it should be done?
Why? Because it's the same. This is the medical world today does things, unfortunately. We got to cram in as much as we can in a very restricted period of time. Years ago, people used to test speech in noisy environments. Now, we've substituted a lot of other procedures that we can do. We can program hearing aids. We can do all these things that we couldn't do 10 years ago. And what has dropped out of the testing situation is testing in noise. And in my opinion, it's a terrible, terrible mistake. And almost all audiologists, should have the capability of testing in noise. If they come back and they say to you, "Well, you know, you do pretty well in, your hearing, you got a hearing loss, but you understand speech quite well," and you know you're not understanding speech quite well, you need to say to them, "Could you test me in a noisy environment because that's where I have my breakdown."
Okay, I think that'll be the last question, after which Dr. Sweeto will be available. You can take that question.
Oh, we have one more.
That's the last question for today.
Is there any evidence or are there any studies that show one ear is better than the other in recognizing language sounds as opposed to any other sound?
So the question is, is one ear better, if everything else is equal, in recognizing language sounds than other sounds? And the answer is yes. There is a right ear advantage for most people. And it's because your left ear is what processes language.
Thank you very much.
Okay, my pleasure.